At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Zoe Hazel. Zoe is a mental health advocate, campaigner, and public speaker with lived experience of binge eating disorder, bipolar disorder, and borderline personality disorder. She is a member of Rethink Mental Illness Lived Experience Advisory Board, as well as contributing to a range of mental health research panels, and has spoken out in Parliament to petition for the reform of the Mental Health Act. Zoe has also spoken at the 2024 Jump the Scales Eating Disorder Summit and this year's Jump the Scales March. I was so honoured to speak to Zoe about her experience of binge eating disorder, unfortunately about the lack of treatment she has received and what we really need to do to change in order to support people going forwards. I really hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope that it gives you lots of insight into what it's like to live with binge eating disorder, as well as how to support someone if you are in a treatment team. Hi Zoe, it's so nice to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Amazing. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I've had my hair cut today for the first time in probably a year and a half. I'm feeling very good about myself. So like over the past few weeks I've been like, I need to have like more self-care rather than just burning out. And so today was getting my haircut day, which is very fun.
Oh, I love that. I had self-care today as well. Got my brows done. So it's obviously been a self-care day for everyone.
Absolutely, as it always should be. Did you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, I'm Zoe Hazel. I have lived experience of binge eating disorder, but I've also got bipolar and been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder as well. So all the fun. But yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit today about my experiences with binge eating disorder, the sort of lack of services and support out there, and why it's really important people need to know more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for laying the foundations. You did a brilliant overview there, and I'm really excited to chat to you. I enjoyed so much hearing you speak at the Dump the Scales March, and when you were speaking, I was like, I have to have this person on the podcast. It's happening. And I think I came up to you and was really into it, and I was like, oh my god, you were amazing.
I wasn't awkward at all. It was lovely.
Good. Oh well, I'm glad, because sometimes I feel it's so awkward in those situations, but equally I know when you're a speaker, like, it's so nice to have people's positive comments. So did you want to start by maybe telling us a bit about your experience of living with binge eating disorder?
If I was to sort of pinpoint where I think it started, I was probably about 11 when I just started sort of secondary school. And that's when I sort of started getting access to food outside the home, and sort of access to money. And so, yeah, if I look back, that's sort of where that sort of trend started for me, sort of being able to eat in secret and sort of control how I was getting food and how I was managing that. I think there was definitely times when I was younger, where perhaps my eating habits weren't particularly normal. But I think it was sort of from that age that things started to get sort of control for me. But I didn't actually get diagnosed until I was 29.
Whoa.
Yeah.
18 years.
Yeah. So as you can imagine, it kind of got quite out of control over the years. But because when I was in school and sort of in my early teens, late teens, even in my early 20s, I was the picture of health. I had the body that people wanted, you know, the desirable body. I was active, so people didn't really notice, and I was really, really able to hide it. I mean, I do remember a couple of times in my late teens where I moved my bed away, and there was just a mountain of wrappers under my bed where I'd been hiding it, because I knew that they'd be spotted in the bin. But other than kind of a lot of shame and a lot of comments about, you know, the unhygienic side of that, we didn't really have many conversations about why that was happening. I think it was more like, this is a really bad thing, but there was not really any probing into the why and the reasons behind that. So I think, yeah, I do feel like looking back, there were opportunities for conversations that were missed, and not just by my parents, but just by the world. But because I had quite a bad spinal injury just before I turned 22, I was paralysed temporarily from the knee down on my right and my left side, and, you know, hospitalised because of that. And I was really lucky they were able to dissolve. I had a slipped disc and it calcified and it was penetrating against my sciatic nerve, and I'm really, really lucky because it could have severed it. But luckily I went to hospital just in time. Oh. And they were able to dissolve it, thankfully, because otherwise it would have been surgery, and they said if I had the surgery it would have been a 50-50 chance that I walked again. That's a lot to hear when you're 21. Yeah. And because of that, and because of the process of recovery, my eating habits didn't change, but my ability to move completely changed. My mobility just reduced so bad that suddenly I was gaining weight like that. It was just pouring on. and it was suddenly impossible to deny that I had a problem. But because I'd had a problem for so many years, I still did deny it. Oh, it's fine, you know, this is just, I'll lose it all, you know. Went through all of the denial stages of, like, it's just temporary, you know, I can just change how I eat, you know, all the things that we tell ourselves when we're not ready to accept that there's an issue. But I think the hardest part was, despite my body shape changing completely almost overnight, you know, within a year I'd gone up nearly 4 dress sizes, there's no intervention for the other side. You know, no doctor is going, whoa, why is this happening? Let's get you some treatment. It's just shame. You know, it's you have to do this, you need to do that, not why is this happening? Are you okay? It's almost as soon as you go over a certain size, a certain BMI number, the onus is completely on you. Mm. There's no care. It's almost as if, well, you got yourself there, you can get yourself out of it. But no one ever asked me, you know, if I was okay, what was happening, why did this happen? And I mean, I know not everybody who's overweight has an eating disorder, but there's a reason people are getting that big, and it's not just because they can't put food down. Like, there's always something more triggering that, whether it's depression or grief or isolation. You know, there's so many reasons, but there's almost always something happening behind the scenes that people just aren't asking about. Mm. And the world is so cruel.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting what you've said there about there not being anything on the other side, because if you had had that injury and then you'd gone down four dress sizes.
Oh, absolutely. That would have been.
I imagine there'd be quite a, you know, lot. There'd be a discussion of your weight has rapidly decreased. Like, you know, what's going on?
Do you need
some support? And I mean, I really want to talk to you about sort of the healthcare and interventions and the stigma, but just before we speak about that, I'm really interested, and I know this is often something that comes with when you've been through therapy and you might not have known this in the moment, but you mentioned kind of when you first started binging when you were 11, it was like a way of almost control, and you then had money to like control what food you had. But then you also mentioned later down the line that you were then out of control. I wondered if you had any thoughts around why binge eating felt like the right thing to do, or did it even feel like a choice that you had?
I think it sort of just came from, I mean, I love my parents. They're great. They did their best. But I grew up in quite a strict household. And, you know, we did eat healthy, but unfortunately, unbeknownst to anyone at the time, I was experiencing quite significant trauma. And I think it started as a way of rebelling and kind of that comfort, you know, of the sweets and the good stuff. And I think the having that one thing to myself, I think that's how it started, of like, this is something I can do when the world feels so chaotic and structured and also completely out of my control. In some ways, my life was quite set out and strict, and then I had this horrible thing happening that I had no idea how to explain or process. And in the middle, there was food. And it was kind of this thing that I had, this relationship that I had, that started off, I think, from a nurturing place for me, but very quickly snowballed into something that I became addicted, because it was this cycle of you'd eat because everything felt too much, and then after you had the binge, you would feel the overwhelming shame and you were horrified, you know, I can't believe I've just done that. And then that fed into the sad feelings, and before you know it, it was just snowballing into, yeah, so it started off as a control thing and then it ended up controlling me.
I think that is an amazing description. And I'm interested as well, and you used the word addicted, and I think obviously people will have different experiences of this, and some people may say it is like an addiction, others might not. But I think from my perspective, it describes it quite well in that sort of, you know, nobody has a drink thinking one day I'm going to become an alcoholic.
No.
But then at some point they get to a point where they're so reliant on that in order to soothe, to numb, you know, to navigate situations. And from what you're saying, it sounds like that's a similar thing with the food, in that it started as a way to comfort yourself, to nurture yourself using food. And then ultimately it got to a point of, well, I don't know what else I can do now.
Yeah, it was very, it becomes very habitual. Mm. But the thing I will say that I think stands out from other addictions is that you can't quit food. You know, you can't go cold turkey, you can't go to rehab and step away from food because you need it to survive. And I think in some ways that makes it a bit harder, because, you know, you need to eat. You can't walk away from food. So in some ways you're trapped in this almost abusive relationship with something that's actually supposed to be very nurturing and good for you. And then all of a sudden it turns into this thing where you can't escape it, but you also need it and love it. And that, I think, is why I choose to use the word addiction, because it does, it just, you know, you are, as human beings, we are addicted to food. We have to have it to survive. And when that balance is disordered, it can become really, really difficult to navigate.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you a question, and this is very much not coming from me. This is coming from, I think, the sort of stigma that is around things like binge eating disorder. You were saying about how obviously you had your accident, and you know that sounds awful. Some people maybe that don't have an understanding of eating disorders may think, well, you know, if you weren't doing that activity anymore, why didn't you just stop eating? Or like, why didn't you just reduce what you were eating? What would your response be to a comment like that?
I think, like I say, it started for me at such a young age that you know, it'd been over 10 years by the time I had my accident that these habits, this addiction had taken such a hold on my life that I just simply didn't know how. It was a core part of my life. It was, you know, I would, you know, I had, you know, I think what people don't understand about some parts of binge eating disorder is there is just as much restriction behaviors as there are the binge side of things. I would get myself into a cycle where I would restrict maybe 2 days because, you know, I was aware that was a problem, and I, you know, all the time that I wasn't thinking about eating, I was thinking of how I could not eat. And that's such a big part of why it's a disorder and not just the problem with putting food in your mouth. And I think that you know, there's so much more to it than people see. People just see the side of it where it's the, you know, the weight and the eating, but actually there's just as much as the not eating and you know, even the exercising. I mean, I'm unable to do as much exercise as I could, but I would be wearing myself out going, oh, well, I've done this, so now I have to compensate. So the compensating and the restriction is still there with binge eating disorder. I just think that people don't see that. So that's probably what I would say.
I think, if this is okay to say, the reason people don't see it is because as a society, we're so focused on weight that if you don't look like you're in a body that restricts or that overexercises, people cannot fathom that could be something that you're engaging in. However, if you are in a larger body, they can just say, well, yeah, of course you overeat.
I mean, I feel like people will look at someone in the obese category as someone that has McDonald's 5 times a day, or at least for every meal, because that's how it looks, and I do get that. But for me, a lot of it is more to do with the amount consumed rather than what exactly is consumed. I mean, if you ate every vegetable under the sun like a massive platter, I mean, overconsumption of anything is going to do your body damage. And actually, when you're in the restricting mode, if your body's used to having a large amount of food, when you then essentially starve it, it then hoards everything as fat because it thinks that it's not going to get another meal. So actually, you know, there's a lot of jokes out there of, oh, well, if you skip a meal, that won't hurt you. But actually, that's just as damaging to gaining weight as it is eating too much, and I don't think that's talked about enough.
No, again, because I think that we're such a weight obsessed society in the respect that smaller is better. You know, it's how could possibly skipping a meal mean that something quote unquote bad is going to happen, i.e. I'm going to gain weight? But I don't think that the education piece around there, as you know, you've highlighted, if you do restrict for a long period of time, your body then, when you do start eating, overconsume because it's thinking, oh God, like this could be the last chance.
Absolutely. And that's another part of that cycle that you get trapped in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine from what you said, I'm seeing the cycle as like, you know, you restrict and then your body's like, no, 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 we need food. Therefore you overeat. But then because you've overeaten, you then feel guilty about how much you've eaten. You feel very ashamed, which then causes the restriction to happen again. And then there's that cycle.
Yeah, so that's part of it. And then also, you know, there can be other emotional triggers. You know, having bipolar disorder makes it very difficult as well, because when I'm in the depressed side of bipolar, I do tend to eat more. It's almost like you're craving that that sort of comfort, you're not making as healthy choices because you don't have the energy. So, you know, it's much easier to order a takeout from your bed when you just can't move. So making those healthier choices. But then if I go into quite an elevated hypermania, I don't feel hunger. So, you know, these are things that are working against me as well. Just trigger the eating disorder, because I mean, I'm pretty stable with my bipolar at the moment, but I was unmedicated for quite a long time trying to get the right diagnosis. And during that time, you know, my eating was completely out of control, because not only was I, you know, struggling with the eating disorder, I was also struggling with, you know, with my mood being up and down, and therefore my eating habits being completely out of control as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a lot of people that I have spoken to with any eating disorder, there's quite often a comorbidity involved that then kind of adds a level of difficulty to whatever somebody is struggling with. I suppose on the topic of that, what was your treatment experience, if any? And did that include anything to do with the bipolar?
So I didn't actually get diagnosed with bipolar until 3 years ago. Wow. Like I said, I've been dealing with unmedicated version of that for a long time. So I got diagnosed with binge eating disorder in 2019. I had been under my community mental health team in the past consistently. From 2016, and the whole time I was there dealing with a very severe psychotic breakdown that I had the year before, I honestly could not count how many times I said, I'm worried about my eating, I'm worried about my weight, I would like some help with this. And I was continually told to just focus on my stability, and that we can worry about physical stuff later. Even though they were clearly linked, mm-hmm. You know, I was expressing, well, actually, you know, when I'm feeling this way, like, it's worse. I mean, I didn't know that there was such a thing as binge eating disorder. I'd never heard of it. I only really knew about bulimia and anorexia back then. And obviously neither of those applied to me. So I didn't know I had an eating disorder. I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know that that's what the problem was. And because I'd just honestly never heard of it. I just thought I was the problem. And so I was constantly being told, you know, worry about that later. I'd go to the GP, well, you know, you're under mental health services, let's just get that sorted first. And then when my therapist finally brought up binge eating disorder, she said, well, that's what you've got. She said, but unfortunately, we don't have any services in the area that can give you any treatment for that. And then it was kind of dropped and never really brought up again. I've had various talking therapies, and every time I've tried to sort of talk about eating, it's been in a very, very generic way, almost like you would talk to anyone about like generic comfort eating, which I think most people have some kind of experience of at some point, but that's not the same. There's definitely elements that are the same, but it's definitely not in depth enough, and it's not supportive enough, and it doesn't really help you understand or plan for how to move forward. So anything that has been sort of a positive step in my recovery has come from deep internet searches and just trying to navigate my way through it myself.
So realistically, in answer to the question, what treatment have you received for your binge eating disorder? It's not.
I haven't.
You haven't? No. And I think that's the shocking thing, isn't it? It's interesting, and, you know, makes me even more upset. I spoke to somebody else on the podcast and they've got offered, and they said exactly the same thing. They were diagnosed with it, but then told, we don't have a treatment option for you.
And then it's just brushed away, like, well, we can't help you, so get on with it. That's how I felt.
And so what happened when they told you there's no treatment? Are you discharged, or you kept on their services and you have like a more broad?
So it was my local community mental health team that diagnosed me. So I was still under treatment for the other issues that I had, but the actual eating disorder side was just, we had like one conversation about it, and it was like, well, there's nothing out there, I can't refer you anywhere. And then I was, if I'd just come for that, I would have just been discharged, but obviously I was having other issues at the same time, so they kept me on for that. But yeah, it was one conversation where they were like, this is your diagnosis. They didn't even give me a sheet about it. They just said, like, we've got nothing. So I had to go home, Google it. I found the Beat helpline, and I rung them, and I just cried, and I said, I don't know. You know, the lady on the phone was very helpful, but she was like, there isn't anything in your area. You know, she was like, you're obviously welcome to use the website and, you know, get any help. You know, you're welcome to call any time. There was no person that I could see in real life. There was no real explanation of what I had or what was, you know, or any kind of treatment plan, or really any time to process it.
I mean, it is shocking, and I just can't believe that, you know, in 2025 it's the way that it is. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I'm sure you have thought about this, and realistically the first step would absolutely be to, you know, at least give someone a friggin' resource, let alone actual treatment. But yeah, if you could wave your, like, a magic wand, what do you think that treatment would potentially look like for binge eating disorder?
I mean, I could only really go by services that I have experienced. So when I was going through treatment for my personality disorder, it's a lot about understanding the disorder itself, and, you know, what it is. They actually go through with you and kind of explain, like, what it stems from, and you know, how it kind of functions in the brain, and really takes you from the ground up. You know, this is what it is, this is how it affects you, this are the type of things that you could have gone through that would have, you know, led you here. So that's kind of where you start, and that would have been helpful in itself, you know, to understand, like, why am I doing these things, what is it in my brain that's telling me to do this, what's being activated. But having someone, like, sort of talk that through you and answer your questions, rather than trying to figure out what to type into Google, which is, you know, you can only go so far on your own. So that would probably be the first thing that I would sort of, and then just you know, once you understand how something works, how it affects you, that's when you can start looking at, well, okay, so how can I combat that? And then working with someone to, I don't know, if I don't know how to treat it, I don't really know how to say, but I suppose looking some way of what coping mechanisms I can put in, so that when I'm feeling a certain way and I'm triggered, you know, what can I do instead? What ways can I maybe just start by reducing, or, you know, what tools can I put in to say, okay, you know, how can I reassure myself? How can I go forward? But I mean, I've had none of that. So I'm kind of trying to figure it out by myself. And there's some days where I manage, and there's some days where I don't, but I don't have that fallback of someone going, well, it's okay, you know, this is normal.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, you know, you're not a professional, you're an individual that is suffering from binge eating disorder, therefore you need that support. And I think one thing that is really interesting, and I really want to highlight, because I think that so many people don't realize this, but neither of the two things that you've just mentioned involve food. And I think so many people think, well, the treatment for binge eating disorder firstly is, you know, to get someone to stop binging, they need to cut down what they're eating. It's absolutely not.
No.
And I think that the fact that you have highlighted there, the key is to understanding about what's going on in your brain, what's triggering you in a way that makes you then want to kind of perform certain behaviors, And then once you've got that understanding, what can I then do to support myself to not engage in those behaviours? And I think that's such an important thing to highlight, because ultimately, and I think the same thing about all eating disorders, the recovery process from an eating disorder is not about food. Food
No.
obviously plays into it, but food plays into it because, as you said before, we all have to eat. So yes, yeah. we have to work on our relationship with food, but ultimately understanding why we're using food as a way to cope with our emotions or difficult situations, that's the key. And yeah. then developing new ways of coping rather than that reliance on food.
Yeah, it's definitely about understanding the drive behind it. What are we trying to, what void are we trying to fill? That kind of thing. But those are really difficult things to figure out on your own.
Oh God, yeah. Well, and I think, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, going through therapy and stuff, there's a reason why therapists exist. You know, it provides that safe space where you can explore things and you can talk about things. And, you know, I've often been to therapy sessions and I've left thinking, well, I've never even considered that before.
Yeah, that's it.
Not that the therapist has necessarily planted the seed in my head, but they help you explore things in a way that you can't do on your own.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's otherwise you're trying to have a conversation, but it's a one-way conversation, and that's really, really difficult, because I don't feel like therapists give you the answer. I feel like therapists help you find the answer in a way that you just aren't capable of on your own, because they don't tell you what you feel, they don't tell you what to do. They just help you safely explore things, and there's someone to bounce back off. And whereas at home, you're just putting out questions to the world and you're just not getting a response back.
I think also one thing that I found in my own therapy was that I had a lot of negative beliefs about myself and my behaviours, and I had a lot of resentment towards that, felt very guilty for things and ashamed of things. And I've never had a therapist say, you shouldn't feel bad about that or what have you, because ultimately, you know, I don't think that's appropriate for them to say, because if you feel bad about something, exactly. But I think having that space to explore it, as you've said, I binged yesterday and I feel awful about it. Okay, well, let's dig deeper into why that happened. And it can help. Yeah. It can help reduce that shame and the guilt associated with it, which I think allows you to almost give yourself some slack. But I think it reduces that level of guilt and shame that you have, which allows you to then make positive steps forward.
Yeah, and just sort of challenging as well. Like, you feel that way. Okay, you feel that way. That's valid. But like, why do you feel that way? Where has that come from? And just kind of getting to unpack, not just unpack the feeling, but actually unpack the feeling behind the feeling. And it's just, that's really hard stuff to do by yourself. Like you said, therapists exist for a reason, and that's their job. And if you don't have access to that,
what are the things that you've done to help yourself if there's people listening in a similar situation to you?
I think for me, just the first thing I did, I think, was start talking about it, because eating disorders thrive in silence. You know, binge eating disorder, you know, a main part of that is the secret eating. If you take away that secrecy, it doesn't make the problem go away, but it definitely makes it harder to hide. And if it's not hiding so much, it's not going so deep, and you've got people questioning, well, you know, how is that going? And that was a massive step for me, just being able to be like, well, actually, no, I do have a problem and I need to talk about it. And I think sometimes, and I mean sometimes, because I haven't cracked it, you know, I am still, it still has some grips in me, but just texting someone and going, do you know what, actually, I just feel like I really need to binge right now, and having someone go, well, how are you feeling? So it's not replacing a therapist, but you do get to have a little bit of that conversation where you weren't before, because you were just getting overwhelmed and you were keeping it to yourself, so you didn't have an outlet for that. So that, for me, number one, was the biggest thing that I've noticed. And number two, just, I know it's going to sound really cliche, but just being kind to myself. So if I do mess up and I do have a binge, you know, even if I might have not had one for a while, you know, we're human, we mess up, we make mistakes, we fall back into old habits and patterns, it happens. But going, okay, that happened, what can I do now? Rather than going, that happened, I'm a terrible person, I've ruined everything. I haven't ruined everything. I've had a relapse, and that's okay. People relapse. I am not cured. I have a disorder. I've done something that I didn't want to do, but that's okay.
And also, what can you learn from that as well? You know, I always said that if I found myself in a really restrictive pattern or was exercising too much or something like that, it's like, okay, what's, like, let's look at this situation. What's going on right now that's a trigger for this? Is that something that I could have implemented a coping strategy before so that I didn't then lead to this? And as you said, you know, I think when I had my relapse with anorexia, I'm not grateful for it in the slightest. That feels like a very wrong
thing
to say. But it needed to happen to show me that I wasn't quite where I thought I was. And I was very much living this life like, I'm totally recovered, like, I'm fine, I can do all these things. And actually, I was still engaging in so many behaviours that were negative. I was then, you know, having an incident where I felt like all my plates kind of fell to the floor and I couldn't spin them anymore. And that's when I relapsed. But now I've gone away and done the work because of that relapse. It's put me in a much stronger position. So I always try, as difficult as it is, because when you do have a relapse or you engage in a behaviour, it can feel really shit. But I think it's saying to yourself, okay, this has happened. I can't help the fact that it's happened. What can I do from this situation now going forward?
Yeah, how can I look after myself now? And then if I had to, you know, think of a third, just, I think I try, and it doesn't always work, but I try, and I'll write down what it is that I want. So instead of immediately rushing to the nearest shop or doing an online order and going, right, I just need all the things, because my brain is just like, I write it, physically write down, like, what is it? And then I'll try and leave it. I try and leave it for like half an hour. And sometimes that's enough. Sometimes it's enough to just go, I've acknowledged how that feels and I've acknowledged what it is that my body wants. And sometimes just walking away, because you've kind of got it out. It doesn't always work. Sometimes I just buy it anyway. But, you know, I'm not perfect. And like I said, I'm still in recovery. I am working trial and error. Yeah. But I do find that sometimes just writing out how I feel, what it is I would buy, and then going away, putting some music in my ears, seeing if I can regulate. And sometimes I can and sometimes I can't, but that definitely has been helpful in some incidences. And even if it stops one, it's a winner for me.
Well, and then by stopping one, you then get the encouragement that, you know, next time if those feelings rise, because, okay, I did this before, I can do it again.
Exactly.
I don't need to binge. I think it's such a good point, whether it's writing it down, whether it's texting a friend to say, this is what I want to do, whether it is just literally going and standing outside and just staring at the sky instead of going to binge. Sometimes I think that pause before engaging can be enough. Other times, as you said, it's not, and it doesn't work every time. But I think, like you said, the more that you practice those behaviors, the more it can be implemented, and you
kind
of help yourself. So thank you so much, Zoe, for chatting to me. It's honestly been such a pleasure to chat to you, and yeah, we'll speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.